Welcome to Authors on Tour Live, a weekly podcast for people who love to hear about books from the authors themselves. Presented by Belco Credit Union. Visit www.belco.org/authors.asp to learn more about how Belco can help you. My name is Darren Fote, and today we are podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore, one of the premier independent bookstores in the nation, with three locations in the Metro Denver area. You can visit www.authorsontourlive.com for a complete list of upcoming podcasts. Wait a minute, it's time to begin.
Good afternoon, everyone. On behalf of the Tattered Cover Bookstore, it's my pleasure to welcome you and to thank you for supporting your local independently owned bookstore. David Cross earned early recognition as a writer when he won an Emmy Award for his work on The Ben Stiller Show.
It's true.
He's a three-time Emmy Award nominee, and I think that's enough for the formal remarks. I was really hoping to get to say, "Shut Up, You Fucking Baby," which was his comedy album that was nominated for a Grammy. And now that I have, would you officially welcome David to the Tattered Cover?
Thank you. Thank you very much. God bless us, each and every one of us. First of all, this is, I think, the nicest bookstore I've ever been in my life, and it's really impressive. What? Too late. Podcast. Why, do you work for a competing bookstore? Whoever said that? So, but you don't, because you think people are going to travel from afar to come here? Because I don't think that's going to happen. But it's really nice, and I've been to El Paso, so, you know, yeah. Yeah? Black power. There you go. All right, so what I've been doing is I'll read a couple pieces, and I'll ask you guys what you think, and then we'll do some questions and answers, and then the thingamajig. All right. So let's, and thank you for coming, by the way, especially in your, it's such a beautiful day out, and you're inside. Is there any requests for pieces that I haven't read three or four times already? Or should I just pick something?
Pick something.
Okay, fine. God, it keeps changing. all right, I'll pick my second favorite one. How about, I haven't read this one yet, Sweet Mary J., which is page 109, if you'll turn to your... No, don't. Don't do that. Okay. This is true, though. This is some people have asked me if this is all quoted from her, Mary J. Blige. Okay. Recently, in an interview with someone somewhere, the lovely and unarguably talented singer Mary J. Blige said out loud for people to hear that God wants me to have bling. Yeah, it seems odd at first glance, but this may in fact be true. I certainly can't verify that God did or didn't talk to Mary because I wasn't there at the time, but I'll go ahead and take her word for it. You know, much like the rest of the planet takes the word of Abraham or Moses or Muhammad, Joan of Arc, Joseph Smith, Oral Roberts, Pat Robertson, George W. Bush, or that crazy lady in Houston who drowned her three kids in a bathtub a couple years ago, who, like Mary J., were all spoken to by God while nobody else was around to verify it. So we are left to take it on good faith that Mary J., if she's not lying, is correct that God truly does wish, or perhaps command, her to wear bling. Now, it's not my place to say that Mary J. Blige is full of shit. Although, because I firmly and absolutely don't believe in God, much less one that whispers fashion advice, I can say I think she's full of shit. And because I believe that God is a human construct and not real, and that it would therefore stand to reason that it is impossible for a God that I don't believe exists to do anything including, but not limited to, taking time from what would imagine to be a very busy, and I mean packed, schedule to help a self-important American R&B star justify her narcissism and greed. But If you do believe in God, then why not believe that in the nanoseconds between shattering the left leg of a housewife from Taipei, making a rainbow in Gothenburg, Sweden, and allowing that guy in Oakland the strength and courage to rape that lady, all while simultaneously allowing a child of Christian Scientists in Santa Fe to die from untreated strep throat, that he chose to make his presence known to her because that was the only time to get Mary J. alone that day because she, too, has a busy schedule. And that God quickly expressed his desire that she wear bling just before scooting off to Yellowknife, Canada to make sure a grizzly bear decapitated an honor student before dawn. Actually, I should say continue to wear bling, as she had been wearing bling long before God ever chose to seemingly unnecessarily intervene. Sure, why not? God chose to make sure that Mary J. knew that he wished it, that she adorned herself like so many Nubian princesses with precious metals and gems. He talked to her about this, and only this, not about issues of morality or anything concerning spiritual guidance. He didn't even tell her where the treasure was buried. I guess he told her to wear bling in order to allay any guilt she might have had over such a selfish and vain use of precious resources. He did this so that she could feel better about herself. Basically, so that she could feel better about herself for the simple blingish act, as opposed to feeling better about herself and inflating her worth through an act of charity. Through helping others with a small stipend of the largesse, which has been given to her by millions of fans with neither her talent nor bank account. Now, is there a correlation to be made between Mary J. Blige, whose God made his light known to her to assuage some guilt she might have had about the recent purchase of a 24-carat white gold Rolex watch with kangaroo strap and sapphire centerpiece, and the semi-literate 42-year-old father of six who mechanically wants, hopes, and actually prays for some divine guidance to help him finally pick the winning lotto combination? You might think there is, but I say no. I don't think so, because one is lying and the other is desperate for belief in at least one good thing in this permanently stained, unforgiving injustice that is life. Go ahead and get that. That's fine. The fact that Mary J. Blige is associated with a community that enthusiastically spends upwards of 25% of their money, and that is a totally made-up figure, on useless, unless factoring respect garnering or pussy magnet abilities, vanity items like chrome-spinning tire rims or diamond-studded platinum mouthpieces makes it almost questionable as to why she felt the need to proffer such a lame, unimaginative excuse for the ubiquitous ostentation that is commonly taught to be respected worldwide. Does it bring relief and peace to those working with international organizations trying to raise awareness of the brutality and absence of any respect for life that takes place in South African diamond mines? Maybe even the mine partially owned by gospel preaching and likewise Wisdom of God's chit-chat recipient, Reverend Pat Robertson? He has a major stake in a diamond mine, for real. One would hope so. I like to imagine the latest rap artist making a video in which a giddily objectified, big-titted, big-assed whore of the moment undulates in a rubber skirt and 6-inch stilettos while handing next year's Where Are They Now award winner a silver plate holding different diamond fronts with his clever pun stage name in Boston rubies or emeralds or whatever other useless and awkward foolishness he feels he needs to impress the aforementioned cock dumpster. I don't know if Mary J. Blige's God is the same as Billie Holiday's God or Marie Antoinette's God or Elie Wiesel's God or Chief Sitting Bull's God or Stephen Biko's God. I don't know. I do know that it's not my God. My God likes those rope bracelet things that you get on Martha's Vineyard. I know that for a fact. He told me one time when I was sleepy and confused. All right, one more. That's it. No, it's all right. All right, guys. How about Woodstock? I haven't read that one. Woodstock. Okay. I am well on record stating my disdain and contempt for hippies. Any new age Jitronics piloted, or no, Pilates, sorry. Oh, you know what else? I have to, I feel obligated and really lame, I guess is the best word, for the incredible amount of mistakes that are in this book. Not factual mistakes, but grammatical. I lazily was under the assumption that you just kind of write a bunch of shit and then the editor gets it and a proofreader gets it and they go, hey, you misspelled this or you did, you know, because I would just write in and since the proofreader has been fired and they got a new guy, I'm not joking, that's all true, and the second printing, we have found 25 mistakes so far, at least 25, big, glaring mistakes. There's a thing where I talk about Jim Belushi, and I describe his outfit, describe the movie we're shooting, it's in Las Vegas, and he's supposed to look, the outfit was supposed to be like lounge lizardish, and in here, I didn't know this until I was reading it out loud at reading, and it's in here, it's lounge lizard fish. There are tons of them. They're like, anyway, the second printing is not gonna have those. What?
I was gonna ask.
Yeah, it's.
What is a lounge fish?
It's a made up creature that a proofreader somewhere decided was more appropriate than a lounge lizard ish. Well, Jim had nothing to do with this story. He didn't proofread the book. I mean, the guy's fallen in hard times, but it's not. It hasn't gotten to that. Anyway, yeah, there's a bunch of crazy shit in here. All right, so I'm well on record stating my disdain and contempt for hippies. Any new age, Jitronics, Pilates, Stevie Nicks wannabe, armed with enough Dr. Bronner's soap and a bushel of sage, can and will tell you in five wow mans or less what's wrong with the world or America. But they will consistently be erroneous because they will have left themselves out of the equation. And they are very much a part of what's wrong in America. But how can they be part of what's wrong with America? They leave most of us alone and don't impose their illogic on others, yes? They are a simple and passive breed of drum-circling do-gooders, right? Right? Nah, not really. Just as they might correctly consider all outdoor advertising, billboards, advertexture to be eye rape or whatever half-assed cutesy name they might call that, I consider all of their riot of colors and stupid bumper stickers to be eye rape as well. And the kind of eye rape that leaves you with an advanced case of eye AIDS to boot. I've always hated bumper stickers as a way to communicate. I mean, they're fine if you want to show your support for the Steelers or trumpet your child's academic prowess. It's the bumper stickers that espouse ideology or a political point that I can't stand. There's a smugness and cool detachment to them that I don't care for. As well, they are usually completely ineffective. As far as I know, neither Tibet or Mumia or Leonard Peltier is free. Kids still use drugs, war still wages across the world, and we still proudly trade our children's blood for oil. I would like to force them to practice the random acts of kindness they feel are so important on unsuspecting and uninterested fellow passengers and see what those people think. Will they change their attitude once they see that no one really wants to learn the zither or know how to make a compress out of cow dung and boysenberries to help get rid of crow's feet? There are numerous epicenters of this kind of community across America, and I've been to many of them. But there's one that stands a bit taller and sillier than the rest. No, not Boulder, or Taos, or Marin, or Eugene, or Burlington. It's Woodstock, New York. There is a shop there. Let's call it the Lavender Buffoon. Not really. The lawyer said I can't say the real name, but trust me, it's way better than the one I just made up. Although you might be able to find a picture of the shop placed somewhere in the book. Which you can, and it is on page. It's this one. Oh, it doesn't have the name, unfortunately. It's the White Griffin. That's the name of it, the White Griffin. And it here's the sign here on this photo, which is real. All the other photos are fake. I mean, they're real photos, but I just grabbed them from like a public domain thing and then stuck a thing on there. There's a picture of a cockatiel, and it's a place the white griffin performs psychic animal readings. So not just psychic, which is a huge scam. Psychic animal reading. You bring your animal to them, and they will read. And this is a business which thrives in Woodstock. And then there's a picture of a cockatiel underneath a note that says, Babyhead, that being the name of the cockatiel, Babyhead says, we are all okay, taking a vacation. Woodstock is the fucking worst, I'm telling you. It's awful. Okay, let's call it the Lavender Buffoon that features a pet psychic. A pet psychic, you say? But that's ridiculous. Just being a psychic is ridiculous already. Yes, they've taken perhaps the oldest and scammiest of the scams and kicked it up a level. And there are enough deluded idiots up there to financially support it. There are few greater proponents of absolute improvable hucksterism than psychics. And I'm including anyone involved in religion. The ability to convince intellectually weak suckers that not only can I tell you what tidings or warnings your long-dead uncle wishes to impart, but I can also tell you if your fish is feeling melancholy. Or if your black lab, Howard Zinn's People's History of the United States, really wants to go back and visit the apartment you used to have in the city. Just for this alone, we should do something about these useless people. Maybe tax them more. Create a well-meaning but actually harmful tax so that when they advocate drinking and bathing in your own urine, they also pay into a universal health care system to offset the damage brought on by drinking and bathing in one's own urine. How am I supposed to take you people seriously? Which, ironically, is the single most important thing to you. You so desperately want to be taken seriously, not dismissed with a lethargic wave of the hand, but to have your ideas considered and one day in the future implemented. For that's when your utterly unrealistic, juvenile Marxism for Dummies utopia will come true. You really believe in magic with a K? Really? You believe that burning or ingesting the right combination of exact measurements of fungus and herbs will draw a lover forth? I will give a pass to my friends and loved ones who believe sorta in Jesus and or God and all that nonsense because they've been brainwashed since birth. But magic? That's something you have to, as an adult, think about, consider the real possibilities of, and ultimately accept. As a thinking, rational, educated grown-up, there's no brainwashing involved. Half of this planet doesn't and hasn't celebrated Magic Day for the last 2,000 years. There's no universal culture surrounding it. You were never taught that if you didn't believe in magic that you would burn in hell for all of eternity. No, you're just desperate for something to attach yourself to that will give you some form of, to you at least, unique identity. Never mind that if you move to a place where everyone thinks like yourself, you've pretty much drained the unique factor from it. Oh, hippies. When will you ever learn? All right. And now some Q&A. Who's got a Q? I've got an A for your Q. If anybody's got one. Don't feel obligated. We don't have to. Yes, sir.
What movie were you filming in Michigan when you were doing the Ride Bus Strategy?
It was a movie called Demoted, and I don't know if it'll ever see the light of day. I don't know. It was low budget. It was financed by Russians. And it was, and I'm not, you know, I'm pretty well versed in how business works, the business of films, but this was an independent, it was a low budget, and they didn't have a distributor, so they were just making it, hoping to sell it. Kind of like, you know, I'd say 10% of the movies are made that way, you know, and some achieve great success, like Saw or whatever, and not critically, of course, I'm talking, you know. So I think, but the guys who, and everybody was nice to work with, but it was really, this has happened more and more frequently where, you know, you sign up for the movie and the script is decent. It's a fun character to play for sure. And I was able to cast a friend of mine as like my buddy in the film. So that kind of made the 3 months in Michigan, you know, worthwhile. And but they would do, like, there were two, there was a son of the woman who financed it, who's Russian, who speaks, who lived in London, speaks fluent English. But he's a like a billionaire. He's this billionaire kid. He's not a bad guy, but he's, but you know, there's no super cool billionaires. And so he, of course, got a part in the film. And it's still, I was watching the rushes, and he's like, it's clearly like, let me guess, is the guy who plays the coffee guy the son of the rich person who backed this film? I'm going to take a wild guess. And what was the other aspect of that? There was so then we had this scene where there was a it takes place in a coffee thing. This guy plays a coffee guy, whatever. And initially, all the dialogue was, you know, go to Starbucks and get me, or go to the coffee place and get me whatever. But then on the day of shooting, they're like, oh, you have to say Bigby's, which is a local Michigan area coffee place. And not you know, corporate coffee, you know, you have to say Bigby's. Why do nobody knows what Bigby's is? Why do I have to say go to Bigby's and get me some coffee? What, well, they gave us like a couple grand, and they're letting us shoot in there. So that's what a lot of the movie was like. Can you say this tire company instead of Goodyear? Can you say, you know, Finnegan's Tires on Route 138? So that was constantly happening. Where you go to Bigby's and get me some of that great Southern Michigan coffee that I love so much. Just ridiculous. But anyway, I don't know if it'll ever come out. Maybe more. Yes, ma'am.
When is the Arrested Development?
I think Friday. No, it's. I should have prefaced the whole Q&A with this. They're the holdup right now. Everybody's on board. Everybody. But I think they're working out a deal between the studio and the producers and writers, I believe. I believe that's what we're waiting on. And maybe some actor deals, too. But I haven't heard anything. It's been sit tight for about 4 months now. So I think that's a deal. And there's a ton of people involved. I mean, there's a lot of people involved in schedules and stuff like that. But it'll happen. Everybody wants it to happen. Absolutely. Except Fox. But no. No. It's astounding. I mean, if taking my travels across America and Canada and the UK, and if that is a sample size of the people that are going to see the movie, it is the next fucking Twilight. It's insane. It's going to be such a massive surprise to people. Like, what? $100 million weekend? That's crazy. But I mean, everybody daily, I get that question numerous times. As I said, Canada and England too. And, but yeah, we'll do it eventually. Yes.
Have you followed the works of Bill Hicks at all?
Oh God, yeah. Oh, absolutely, yeah. He was an idol of mine, and I was lucky enough to meet him through a friend. I was doing stand up in Boston, and I met him in the like late '80s, before I left for LA, like probably about 4 or 5 years. And I was that was the time when I was really, even though I had been doing it a bunch, I really was starting to find my voice, and and the act was morphing into more of what it is now. And and very few people knew of him outside of the comedy world, but inside the comedy world, he was just, you know, idolized, you know. And I was lucky, well, yeah, anyway.
What was he like in person? Was he as irate as he was on stage?
No, I mean, You know, there's a huge difference in presenting a show that's an hour monologue. You know, I mean, he had those ideas, but I think I would say he was a little more, like most people are, a little more affable about when you're talking and it's a dialogue. And you know, like Lewis Black is similar, where, you know, you're not sitting down with him for coffee and he's going, "What the fuck is going on with you?" know. I mean, he believes all those things. It's just like all of us, it's kind of amped up a little on stage, so, you know.
But, yes.
I beg your pardon, sir.
I'm wondering what your favorite band is, and on the flip side, has anyone taken over Scott Stapp and Creed as maybe the worst of all time for you?
It's gonna be tough to top Scott. I feel completely vindicated, though, after that YouTube video with him and Kid Rock, and he's getting a blowjob from some whore, you know, and he's like, he's got his shirt off, and he's all greasy and oily. He's like, "It's good to be the king." Yeah. Him and Christ are like that, yeah. Favorite band? It's constantly switching. I guess the stuff that I've been listening to over and over again recently is any and all Okkervil River and Animal Collective. And I've been having difficulty getting the new Dinosaur Jr. out of my CD player. Sometimes I'll hit eject and it'll come out and I'll go, "Ah, fuck it, let's go back in and listen." But those I've been listening to a lot. And I saw Animal Collective at All Tomorrow's Parties a couple weeks ago in New York. It was amazing. Great. Yeah. Yes, sir.
Did you ever consider doing this show live?
You know, we did a tour. Didn't we come through Denver? No, I guess. Yeah, we did, right? We did a tour, a Mr. Show tour 4 years ago, something like that, 5 years ago. And not to put it all on Bob, but it is all on Bob. It's easy for me to say. I'm not married. I don't have kids. I can kennel a dog. You can't kennel kids. But I, you know, we've done a bunch of stuff, and we'll do these little one-off things. We did the Chicago Comedy Festival and hosted a sketch thing at the Just for Laughs Festival in Montreal like 2-3 years ago. Every time we do it, every single time we do it, "Oh, buddy, that was so much fun. Oh, man, I wish I could do this. God, we really should do this. It was so much fun." Yeah, it was. It was. I mean, I can figure this out. We can make it happen. I've already given you a number of proposals and schedules to make it happen. And I sat down. It didn't take me a long time. It took me 2 days. And I figured out routing, which would allow us to go out on tour with all the elements we needed, break the tour up. It did take long. As I said, I just sort of studied how this would work, what we could charge, what kind of tour bus and planes we could schedule and make economically viable and still make some money, not lose money, and make it work so that he could go home and see his kids or his wife and kids, you know, every, say, 5 days for 2 or 3 days. And, you know, they couldn't do it. Wouldn't or couldn't. So, I mean, they're legitimate reasons. As I said, he has kids, his wife works, and, but, you know, I mean. So, I will tell everyone in this room and or listening to this podcast, it's all Bob. okay, but no, we do. I mean, we love working together, and you know, we had a great time doing that show for HBO, and we do want to do something else together, and we will. And again, you know, he lives in LA, I live in New York, and so there you go. Yes, sir.
Do you ever watch Glenn Beck? And if you do, what do you think about it?
Here's the thing. I think Glenn Beck. I was talking to John Stewart about this. Yes, I know John Stewart. Let me pick that name up. We were talking about this, and we were talking about who of those guys, who is putting on more of a show, who is more, who believes it a little less in their heart, and you know, we were talking about O'Reilly and Hannity and, you know, all those guys, and I might be wrong on this, but I think that Glenn Beck is, of all of them out there, of the dozens of those guys, he's the one who's putting on an act a little bit more than everybody else. I know they all, as I was saying before, the Bill Hicks thing, everybody amps up their persona on TV. Everybody has to get a little angrier, a little more vitriolic and passionate about the injustice and what's happening. But I believe he is more of a clown and a buffoon. I mean, he clearly is a silly man with no, who just says things with not a lot of thought behind them, and they don't hold up to reason or logic. But I think he's more of a showman than. I think Hannity believes it a little more, and O'Reilly believes it a little more, even though there are elements to just, you know, putting on a show for people. But Glenn Beck, I think, is more full of shit than the other guys.
They don't cry when they talk.
Yeah, that's a good point. They and he's, you know, I can't. It's very hard for me to believe that somebody like that. I understand the people in the rural areas who only get their information from Fox, who are stoked by these buzzwords and these incendiary kind of if we have national health care, somebody's going to kill your grandmother, there's going to be a death panel, blah blah, and then they're like, what? Oh no. And that I understand more than I don't believe that a man he's not stupid, he's not clearly not a stupid man, and he can communicate and express himself, but I don't believe that he believes that, you know, Obama's a racist, socialist, communist. I just don't believe it. I think he's lying when he says that, and that's part of his shtick. And he's, you know, certainly, you know, he's made a very, very healthy living off of it. And people always will be in America. You know, they'll be willing to be able to make money off of fear mongering and inanity. But, you know, that's why we're the greatest country on earth. Yes. USA, USA, guys, number one. America's number one. All right, probably just a couple more, and then we'll get to the side. Yes.
If you had known from the start that the novel would be too intelligent to be in the USA, would you have taken the character's bias a little bit further in the English place?
No, no, and no. I'm going to answer your question with that basically negates the rest of your question, but I don't, I don't mean this in a critical way, but I don't believe that the Nielsen ratings, which were being used at the time to show the numbers of people who were into Arrested Development, accurately reflected how many people were watching. People watch television completely different nowadays with TiVo and DVR and watching things on disc or downloading or streaming or whatever. And the Nielsen ratings got altered, or I should say the way that people gauged viewer numbers got altered sort of, unfortunately, right after Arrested Development was canceled. But I don't believe for a second that, you know, only a million 2,000 people watched it. I mean, that's just nonsense. And I'm clearly, as demonstrated in this room, and just if for the podcast, if you're listening to this, there are over 1.5 million people here. So I don't think it's a reflection that it wasn't intelligent enough or any of those things. I think plenty of people were watching it. We just like a number of shows where it was some unfortunate timing. I think if it had been 2 years later, they would have realized, you know, with DVD sales and people who TiVo stuff and all that, and you know, it'd still be on the air probably. But all right, one more. Make it a good one. I think David Cross is right up there. No. I think Patton Oswalt and Louis C.K. are right now really at the top of their game. I think, I mean, they're both amazing. I'm jealous of Patton's ability to stand on stage, drink 2 or 3 whiskeys, and still be as eloquent and articulate, and his language and his is so colorful and perfect. And then Louis C.K., who's always been great, I mean, he's always been great, but in the last 2 years, I mean, that guy is blistering and honest and just almost looks effortless. And then there's a guy in England named Daniel Kitson who rarely comes to America. Occasionally he'll go to New York. But if you ever, if he's for whatever reason here or you're near where Daniel Kitson is, go see him, because he's another one of those guys who, it seems like magic that they just have this natural ability. They're completely vulnerable. He stutters too, and the most. He's just great. There's so many good ones, and those guys are, I guess, kind of more obvious. But I'm leaving dozens and dozens of people out. But I like Kristen Schaal and what she does with by herself and with her partner Kurt and Maria Bamford, and there's tons. I mean, you know, oh, what's his name? Jeff Dunham. he is a puppet of a woozle named Peanut, and he's always getting into situations. It's pretty funny situations. All right, well, I think that's good, right? Yeah, fuck it. All right. Thank you very much.
That's all for tonight's Author on Tour. I'm Darren Fode, and we have been podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore in Denver, Colorado. Authors on Tour Live has been presented by Belco Credit Union. Belco has been serving members' financial needs since 1936. Visit www.belco.org/authors.asp to learn more about how Belco can help you. Stay pod tuned in the coming weeks for many more authors as we podcast Authors on Tour.